ladies up here. I'm going to have them introduce themselves to you, but each and every one of them has made an impact on my life when it comes to mothering, and are all admirable women. And so, just so you know, that's why they're up here, because I admire them and I respect them, and they have great insight for you ladies today. So, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Frances Byrne, and I work here actually in the She Ministries office, and I have four children. I have a son that is 23. I have a daughter that is 21. I have another daughter that is 20, and I have another daughter that is 17.
Awesome.
Hi, my name is Yvette Harrison, and I have two boys. One is 22, and the other one is 21.
Hi, my name is Kimberly Short, and I am the mother of two beautiful girls, Trinity, she's 11, and Jordan, she's 9.
Ooh. And I'm Shayna Summers, and I have two children also. I have Mickey, who is 9, and Ellie, who is 6.
So, we're going to dive right in, and like I said before, if you guys, this is just going to have a fluid conversation, as if we're up here just discussing momhood on our couches.
In a totally natural way, which
right.
is how you
Because this is a
motherhood.
Couch. This is my rocker at home. Well, I don't have a rocker.
Yeah.
Well, no, because it needs to be at our house.
Yeah.
I guess we're watching the view. I don't know. So
I'm only going to interrupt Janae like 500 times
yes,
until she kicks
but that's
me
their
out.
Job. That's their job. So
she shouldn't make
you guys feel free to participate in this conversation. So we're going to jump in. Fran, I'm going to call on you from the get-go. Aren't you special? So you said you're a mother of four, which if you look at us, I only have two. Yvette has two. Kim has two. And Shayna has two. So you're the big mamacita.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about what parenting looks like in your household. What does biblical parenting look like?
Well, it's had a lot of different stages now where I'm kind of on the tail end. When I started having my kids, I realized that it doesn't just happen. You know, you just, the kids start doing stuff, and it was like, oh, I have to actually teach them these skills, like communication skills, and I really had to be very intentional. When my kids were really young, it was overwhelming. They're really close in age, and there's times where I felt really, like, overwhelmed, and I'd go to places, you know, I went to this little play group, and all these little kids were very well-disciplined. I had a son that was just such a handful, and, you know, most of the kids were little girls, so it was like, this little boy's, you know, crazy, and so anyway, I was very intentional, and I utilized every tool I could. I read a lot of books. I took classes. I took a class called Growing Kids God's Way, which had such a huge effect on us as a family, because I implemented so many of those things in our home.
Yvette?
I have to agree with Frances in that it was something that at a very young age, once I went places and all you see is your own kids misbehaving and all their faults, of course, as a mom. So I started reading books, listening to messages, and grabbing as much information as I could so I could be very intentional about how they were raised. And even though the days when you're raising your kids can be very, very long, I can tell you right now that the years go by very, very fast.
Yes.
And it's a very small window. It's a very small window of opportunity that you actually have to impact them. And, you know, there are some things that can be so challenging along the way, or we make them into be seem so challenging along the way. But in the big scheme of life, they really aren't.
And you mentioned, Fran, that, should I say Cody?
Yeah.
Cody, if you don't know her son. Cody was a rambunctious little boy.
Yes.
How was discipline in your household.
Oh, my goodness.
Because it's scorned upon. As I mentioned in the Devo, I mean, how many of you feel like you can't really discipline your child because people will look at you like you're crazy and you're abusing them? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Only I just say, yes, I beat my children.
And in public, they seem to do it more. And with Cody, he was born with that spirit, that kind of a defiance, kind of, and you know, it's you look at your kids, and there's, you know, they're all different. You know, all four of them are very different. They even look different. But here came, you know, Cody. You know, as a baby, you'd see him with his little tantrums. You know, he'd move his wrists like, you know, and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, just their temperaments are so different.
That's normal.
And so,
just
yeah. And so I had to learn the keys to his heart. Like what worked with him didn't work with the girls. And so I had, you know, in consistency, I had to, you know, as tired as I was of disciplining him, I had to continually do it and drill those things into him. And he had such a thing with, before we would go to church, you know, I wanted him to be respectful to adults. And even when he was a little toddler, and I'd say, you know, Cody, say hello, you know, and he'd make his face and contort and, you know, do all that stuff that little kids do. I was like, no, that's not acceptable. I don't care if you're tired, if you're grumpy, because as parents, we kind of make excuses. Oh, little Johnny didn't have his nap, you know, sorry, you know. No, that wasn't going to happen. So I had to drill that into him as a toddler on the way to church. Okay, now, Cody, what are you going to do when Mr. So-and-so says hello to you? You're going to look at him in the eye, and you're going to say hello and shake their hand. So from a very young age, it was all these things, you know, drilling into them. So I guess to answer the question, it's like consistency, and even when you're tired, you still have to do it and follow through. Like you said, you know, I had to constantly follow through. Don't threat. Like, oh, if you do that one more time, you're on the 10th time. One more time. You know, it's like, really? They know that you're not going to do it, you know.
What about you, Shana? You have Ellie and Nikki. Do you see a difference between boys and girls?
I don't know if it's – there's just different – they're different kids, and so their temperament is different. My boy, my Nikki was like – he's my angel child. He's so sweet. I mean, is he a perfect child? No way. But Ellie
– Ellie's world?
Ellie is just her own spirited little
– Do any of you follow Shana on Instagram?
Yeah.
Ellie strikes again.
No, just kidding. Because it's good fun. No, but yeah, Ellie is a busy girl. And she's honestly, someone described their kids to me like this once. And I thought they were terrible mothers. So whatever, just you can judge me however you want. But she said, you know, out of my two kids, I think one of them got all my best qualities and the other one got all my worst. And sometimes I think that, like, so I'm like, gosh, Nikki got, like, every good quality, or maybe I don't have, but that I would want to have. And Ellie got these magical qualities that I don't understand that are so beautiful that, like, you think, wow, that's so cool. Like, it'd be cool to be like you in that sense. But then she also got everything about me that I'm like, oh, I wish I could change that. I wish I could change that. And she's got it. And so she's much more me than I'd like to admit, but it's harder.
Yeah, kids are a mirror of us, really. Yeah. They are, even when you don't want them to be.
Yeah.
So it's so important to, like, you know, be aware. Okay, I wouldn't watch certain programs because I didn't want them to see their mom, you know, when they were little, just me, you know, watching TV all day while they're like, go play, you know. So I had to be intentional about that, but anyway.
Yeah. Well, I wore my surviving motherhood shirt for a reason, guys. Ain't no expert here, just making it work.
Kim, why don't you share a little bit about you and your girls?
So, like I said, I have two daughters. My oldest daughter has Asperger's syndrome, which is a form of autism. And my youngest daughter, she is my normal child. And going back to how discipline looks in our household, it is totally different between my two girls. One, I have to discipline in a way where I have to explain what she did in a very clear way, what she did was wrong, why it was wrong, how I'm going to discipline her, and why I'm disciplining her is for her benefit, and I have to explain it in immaculate detail for her to understand. And my 9-year-old, my normal child,
I could just discipline her, and she gets it, she understands it, she knows why. So in our household, it's totally different, but with the children, because yes, all children are different, but when you have a child who has autism, it's completely different, and they are so far, they have a love for each other that I will never understand because I don't have a sister. And my youngest daughter, she has so much grace. So when I look at her, God gave me her so I could learn patience and grace. God gave me my oldest daughter so I could learn patience and grace. So from both of them, I'm actually learning because I sometimes just sit back and I marvel at my kids, just how my 9-year-old, how she just lovingly helps me with her sister, and how she tells me, Mommy, it's okay. It's okay that you haven't asked me how my day was yet because you're having to calm Trinity down. That's okay. So she's just my little angel. And so back to discipline, sorry. With every mother, I think anger is such a trigger. And if you say you don't get angry sometimes with what your kids do when you're like, oh my gosh, they knew better, why are they doing that? If you say you don't get angry, you're lying, because we all get angry. It's just what we do with that anger, that's what matters. Are we going, we have to parent through grace. And does that mean that our kids get by with anything and everything? No. We still discipline them, but we discipline them through grace. We have to show grace through everything that we do. And that's what I always try to remember at home when I'm disciplining my kids, because it's two total different types of discipline. But as long as I'm doing it with grace at the end of it, and they understand that I'm doing it because I love them, that's the most important thing.
You know what's so awesome about kids, too, is that, like, what I've learned is that grace is so easy for kids. Mm-hmm. It's so easy for me to come to my kids and say, hey, guys, that wasn't okay for Mommy to lose it. Mm-hmm. And it's so natural for them to say, it's okay, Mom. It just comes so easy. So that it's a real example of, like, you really do learn that from them, because it's natural to them at that age to just be graceful and forgiving. And I think we learn our unforgiveness as we go on. And it's a protection mechanism that we develop and that strengthens as we age. So it's nice.
And, you know, as Kimberly was saying about anger, out of all my kids, there's one in particular can really just, I can go from one to, a million in anger, just like my thermometer goes up, and it was my son. And part of it is because we are a lot alike. We've got the same temperament. We're very high energy. We're, we push the boundaries. We're like, why not?
High energy?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
We're just, and he used to just, oh my gosh, he used to get me so mad. So I'd have to like shut the door because he's in there having a tantrum, and I would just count, take deep breaths and count to 10, and go in and try to compose myself. Because I would just want to, really lay into him. And so it's really important what you were saying is just, to control myself and maybe not discipline in the heat of the moment, but just kind of give some time and just go, okay, now I can go back in there and not discipline out of emotion, but really just think it through. Because, at that young age, you've got, all these little kids running around you, and you're just like, oh my gosh, and this little boy, and it's really, you really have to pray a lot.
How many of you have young children? Young. Do you know Daniel Lyon?
I feel you, I know.
When she said she had to take a deep breath. Have any of you seen that one where it's like, so angry that you want to roar, take a deep breath, and count to four.
Come on, you guys know the song.
I'm glad we met eye to eye on that.
I don't know.
She's all what?
Yeah.
I have to tell myself that.
Right?
Moment by
exactly.
Moment.
I'm like,
one, two, three. Sorry, that was way off, but when you said you shut the door and had to count to 10, I was like, yep.
Yeah.
Count to four if you
want
to roar.
Real. I mean, this is real stuff. It's not like we're,
How many of you have older kids? Teenage kids, yeah.
Well, that's fun too.
That's fun too. Well, I bet. Why don't you kind of dive in. We're going to get, not heavier, it's not heavier, but we're going to kind of address, one of the gals wrote a note in reference to a prodigal or a rebellious boy. And Yvette, I happen to look at her as kind of like a godmother to my children. She takes care of them a lot, and they adore her and respect her and Vince. Maybe it's because he's a policeman. Maybe if I put on a uniform, my children would respect me. But why don't you share a little bit about raising boys and maybe having someone who's feisty or walking in a troubling time in their lives?
Well, let me start just with the ones that have younger children. I think it's really important, and at any age, that you build that relationship with them, whether it's getting down on the ground with them and playing dinosaurs and cars, or just being part of their world, whether they're boys or girls, I think is really important. Sometimes, and with society and social media, the pressure to do everything with your friends and the pressure to have everything kind of keeps us from being the moms that God wants us to be. And I think it's so important to build that relationship at an early age and continue to build on that relationship with them. Because if you have rules without relationship, you will end up with rebellion. And we will get to those questions in a little bit. But what happened with me and with my boys is I did have that relationship with them. And so when those trials came, one in particular, we had very, also another good tip I have is pick your battles. Does it really matter if they're wearing ugly clothes? Mm-hmm. Yes, it's so cute.
Sometimes.
Long hair. It was the worst thing ever. My kids looked horrible and unkept, and they came out of the shelter.
They didn't want to shower.
They don't want to shower. Their feet stink, and it's embarrassing. And you take it personal. But when they start getting that age where they don't want to dress like twins anymore, or they don't want to wear the clothes you pick them, it's hard. But pick your battles, because really, does it matter if they dye their hair green? Does it matter if they get even a piercing? I mean, seriously, your main goal should be for them to have a good relationship with the Lord, and then second, for them to have a good relationship with you. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't worry about, don't sweat the small stuff. Really don't. I mean, pick your battles with your kids, what kind of clothes they want to wear, especially with you, the little girls. I mean, you're going to have lots of battles with them and how short the skirt is and how low the blouse is. So if it looks wacky, let them dress wacky. So
I'll accept wacky over revealing.
Or if they want to wear the same thing every day, let them wear the same thing.
I told Yvette when we were talking the other day, I said, my son has a jersey that if it were up to him, that would be his only shirt that he would wear. It's a Cardinals jersey. And she was like, you should just let him. I'm like, but Yvette, I can't even stand it. I feel like he's going to school and the teacher's going to be like, should we call her in and ask if he's got any other clothes? I'm like, no, he does. This is what he wants.
Cody had a little blanket, his blankie, that he took everywhere, and he started wearing it as a cape. And everywhere we went, he had his cape, which was his blue blankie.
How long did that last? Because Seth is still there.
Quite a long time. It was a shred in the end, a little rag. Yeah. That's how much he wore that thing. It's like, okay, that's fine, you know.
Wow, you're nicer than me. I'm like, put it back. It belongs in your bed and only in your bed.
No, your kids need to know that you are for them.
Yes.
You are for them. And the more you pour that into them that, you know what, I am for you. I'm on your side because society, their friends, everything will tell them that we're the mean guys. We're against them. But you know what? We want them to know that we are on their side and that we are walking with them. We're going to be there to support them. And the closer you keep your kids to you, the better it is. Because even when they get rebellious, they'll come back. You know, because I've gone through that with two of my kids in particular. Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's fine. In fact, that reminds me. And I would have perfect strangers come up to me. My older son was only a year apart from his younger brother, and he was a big husky boy anyway, and he was already 4 years old, and he still walked around with a pacifier. So you can imagine the looks that I got at grocery stores and everywhere. And people are like, oh, why do you let him? And I'm like, really, does it matter in the big scheme of things? And today he's a perfectly fine adult, so yes.
He doesn't carry that pacifier around.
Yeah, now he carries around a gun, and he's just fine.
It's just in his pocket. He doesn't pull it out. So, I'm just kidding.
So, I mean, you really have to ask yourself, what does it matter? They're your kids, and like she said, be their biggest supporter. I did ask my boys before I came some of the things, and they said, Mom, you were always for us, but you were always ready to believe, you know, the teacher. If the teacher said we did something wrong, you believed the teacher first, but yet we always knew you would support us and to help correct them. And so they knew the difference. So I think that's really important too. So, here I am with my kids in high school, and, you know, the world is out there, so I have to pick my battles. One of the battles I had to pick was with relationships. You know, here you have all this, you want your kids just to wait till high school's over and find the perfect boyfriend or girlfriend that's a Christian, they're a believer, they're not going to lead them down the wrong path. And, you know, that's your prayer since they're in the crib. Well, it doesn't always happen the way you want it. And with my boys in particular, it didn't necessarily happen that way. And so when my son was a freshman, there was a senior girl. Back to picking my battles. They always knew I would not let them date anybody, go to prom, go to ice cream, not even once, with a Mormon girl. Because the high schools they went to were they had Mormon girls. And statistically, you're not going to convert a Mormon girl. I mean, they're raised very faithful to their faith, and more than likely, they're going to bring them over. And the Bible tells us, don't pick your wife from the Canaanites. So that was where I draw the line there. I knew that the other girls that they liked or wanted to go to prom with were not my pick of the litter. They did not really know the Lord. They had, you know, they would come to church with us just to come to church with us. And I kind of knew that in my heart. But I also knew that if I forbade them from everything, they would just do what they wanted while they were at school. So I kept the open communication with, oh, no, I know that Mormon girl likes you. No, we're not going to go down that road. Let's try to refocus. And so I was able to keep that. But with the one girl that came to church with us, she was older than my son. It turned out they ended up in a sexual relationship. And the way I found out about it was because I had, you know, and I did all the protective things. He didn't go out with her alone at night. There were all these things. But because I had the open relationship with him, and there was something different about him. He didn't have that same smile on his face. And I think because he knew it was wrong in God's eyes, he knew that it was bothering him. But because I had that open relationship with him, and his room was never off limits, that's how I found out. And I was already at the point trying to pray her out of his life. I had Thamer and everybody else here at church praying her out of his life. But, you know, you just really, sometimes you have to let your kids make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So I found out, confronted him. It wasn't one of those deal breakers, but it was one of those things where we're going to send you to camp, we're going to send you away, we're going to do everything it takes. And sure enough, he made the decision, broke up with her, and recommitted his life to Christ. And today he's married, and he thinks of it as baggage, and he hates that he had to tell his wife, you know, about that experience. But I think what's important is when they mess up, they have to know that they can be forgiven. You know, and sometimes we try to, because we came to the Lord, and maybe some of you came to the Lord later in life, we hold our kids that we've raised as Christians to a higher standard. And that is a good thing, but know too, they need forgiveness. Another experience that we had, and we didn't let them spend the night places, but another experience we had was he tried alcohol, and when he did, he got really, 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 really drunk. To where, I mean, he could have died of alcohol poisoning. And because he had believing friends, it's so funny. His friend who came from a family that wasn't necessarily believers, but we raised him up with us, he stopped talking to my son for 3 weeks because he was so disappointed in him. And so all this to say, the Lord will make it right. And none of us are perfect, and none of your kids will be perfect. And we will get to your detailed questions in a little bit about rebellion. But I think just pick your battles and remember rules without that relationship with them equals rebellion. And when you have a choice, when your girlfriends call you and you already know what their day is planned on Saturday and you have nothing planned with your kids, it's okay to say no to your friends. When your kids grow up and get married, you can start hanging out with your friends again. But I really feel like it's important to pick your children over your friends. And that's so hard to do now with social media, because it's easy to look on social media and see all those perfect parents and all those perfect friendships, and you just want to be them. But that's not where God has called you. He's called you to be a parent right now, and you have to be a parent. And honestly, for those of you that are single parents or you're trying to raise children on your own, you're the one with the blessing. You're the one with the blessing that you get to pour into your children at 100% rate.
On the topic of friends, Fran, you have a good relationship with all of your kids now. They're all grown. Your youngest is 17. She just graduated. And I would say you guys are friends. I mean, when we hang out, they hang out. We all hang out. And it makes me feel young again. Thank you to Chelsea. So you got your friends. How did you balance, as they were growing up, befriending versus parenting? Because oftentimes we want that relationship with our kids. We want to be able to speak into their lives and them to want to tell us or to even reveal to us when they're stumbling or they're in a relationship they shouldn't be in. We want them to feel like they can freely, openly share that with us. But at the same time, they know that there are consequences for that from their parents. So how did you balance parenting versus befriending?
When they were young, younger, I was not their friend. I was the person that was giving them the guidelines, of kind of the rule book of the how-tos in life, and as the Word of God is as my, you know, this is the truth here, and this is our standard. This is what the Byrne family does. This is, you know, the way the Byrne family, we have like the Byrne family code. So, you know, a lot of talking with my kids at a very young age about all kinds of things. I would use opportunities of non-conflict times, not when you're in the middle of a fight and trying to like correct them and then, you know, give them a lecture. It was the off times when we were just having fun, little lessons or, you know, especially as Cody was getting, you know, the girls, he had long hair, skater dude, you know, and, you know, my husband hated it. And Murray, my husband, had long hair, which is funny. I kind of said, just let him get through the stage. And he started going through that little, you know, cool. Then he had his hair dyed and it was all spiked on the top and shaved on the sides and had his cool outfits. And so the girl thing starts happening. And so with my son, I wrote a lot of letters to him. And I just really poured my heart out in these letters. And the really cool thing in the end, when he got married a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, and when he was packing his stuff up, he pulled out his top drawer, his underwear drawer, sock drawer, pulled out a stack of letters. He kept every single letter I had written him. And I wrote him a lot because it was very hard for me to communicate with him because my thermostat would go way up here because he would just frustrate me so much. So I wrote a lot of letters. I talked to my kids a lot. And the really cool thing to see now, I remember I think hearing James Dobson years ago saying that you want to, your goal is to become friends when they are adults, not when they're kids. When your kids, you know, you want them to know you're in there, you're on their side, you're with them, you're for them, but you're also going to put those boundaries because they need it. They need the boundaries. They need the routine. They need to know that this is a safe zone. Our home is the safe zone. And I wanted to be the Kool-Aid mom. I wanted everybody at my house because I wanted to see who these people they were hanging out with were. And so we would do s'mores nights. We always had a million people at our house. And I wanted them to want to be at our house. We made our house, you know, we tried to make it fun and, mm-hmm. and inviting so that they would want to be there. And now my
it's
kids
it's still
don't
the cool house.
Now they don't want to move out. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, I have a 20, you know, my 21-year-old, she'll be 22 this summer. You know, they're all turning, their birthdays are within a week, all of them, two are on one day. But anyway, I'm trying to hurry. I don't want to just hog all the time saying all this. But really, I just talk to them a lot, and now they're at a point where they want to hang out with us. Like my daughters that are 21 and 20 and even 17, well, they text me yesterday early in the day, what are we doing tonight? You know, they want to make sure that nothing fun is happening so that they, you know, they don't want to make plans until they check with us. It's funny, but they do. They just, you know, or if Murray and I want to go on a date, they're like, can we come? You know, and I love that. I do. I love it. You know, and my 17-year-old, speaking of going to prom, all my kids went to public school. I was not the homeschool mom. I felt bad for a long time until the Lord just really released me and said, hey, that's okay. You know, I thought I would ruin them, so I didn't do it. But you know, they were in public school, and I stayed close to all their friends. You know, oh, bring your friend over, and you know, I talked to their friends, and there was a few I know, I don't trust that one. But you know, I just really was involved, so involved in everything they did, and talked a lot. And now I see the fruit, and it was a lot of tears, a lot of prayer, a lot of hard times. But even Chelsea, she went to prom a couple of weeks ago with, of course, he's a non-believer. She goes to a public school. And now she kind of likes
him. But he wasn't a Mormon.
No.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh, Yvette.
But
we love Mormons. Okay?
Yes.
We love them. They just are in the dark.
It's cool, friend, because I think that the bottom line is that parenting, mothering, it's the principle of delayed gratification. And you have to understand that. Regardless of where, like, when you have young kids, you're like at the front lines of parenting, and it is, you have to go about it understanding that there are days that are not that fun. I mean, yes, it's a blessing, right?
It's hard.
But it's hard. It's hard. And so you do that hard work. It's like anything that you're going to be willing to put in that hard work, knowing that the reward will come, you know, that you will see that fruit. It's like anything that you're going to sow into.
Yes.
You're not going to have an immediate harvest, right? You're going to have, I mean, if you do, you're going to have just weeds that will be pulled out easy. But if you're willing to do that hard work, you're going to reap the benefit. And and that's what I hope anyways.
Well, it will. You know, you pour into your kids and you see them kind of like go off the path and you're like, oh, Lord, you know, and you're on your knees praying and you're crying. And there's nights when I was awake, you know, just crying and writing letters. And I see my son now, 23, married, having his first baby, and he's a youth pastor. I'm like, Lord, you know, just your heart, you go, wow, this little kid that for years, and I never expected him to be in ministry. I was like, okay, he's a smart kid. You're going to be a doctor, a good pro. You know, I never like, you know, saw him doing this, and I see him, and I'm just so humbled. And I'm like, Lord, I know that it was you. I know it was God. It was a lot of hard work, but it wasn't. I'm not taking the glory because I know that God did it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what he's asking of us as mothers is to be on our knees for our kids. You know, we can't underestimate the power of prayer and what that does in the heavenlies. We don't even know what's going on in there. You know, our battle is won by prayer. And do not give up. Continue to pray continuously. You know, when you're driving in the car with them, when you're changing their diapers, you know, when they're out on a date, when they're at school, pray without ceasing.
So that goes to show that your relationship with the Lord does have to be a priority, because you can't be speaking to the sky. He's not going to listen unless you have a personal relationship with him. Shana, why don't you speak on behalf of, you have a very unique relationship with your kids. It's very intimate. And on the topic of friends or parenting, you spend a lot of time with them. So how do you see that benefiting them, and how is your relationship establishing with your kids?
You know, well, I also work a lot, so I spend a lot of time with them. I don't know. I don't get a lot of free time to myself. And so while I agree it is a blessing to get to spend, pour into, you know, I liked what you said, Yvette. It sounds very nice in theory, right? Like, single parents, you get your kids 100% of the time. Go you. That's awesome. But it's also, it's hard to do anything 100% of the time. And yeah. And really, we weren't intended to parent alone. So, you know, that's just, let's just slay the elephant in the room. God never intended us to have to do this alone. And even if you have two parents, God never intended you to do it just with your husband. You know, they say that it takes a village to raise a child, and that's really true. You do need a strong community of support, and you do need to have, if you don't have that, seek that out and do whatever you can to actively seek out helpers and mentors and people that can pour into you and teach you truth and people that can hold your arms up. I mean, I think, I maybe parent alone, but I have a lot of people that support me and help hold my arms up. So I don't feel like I'm on my own. I mean, my goodness. But Barb Wiley's like my mommy mentor. And she, you know, she just spent 3 days, like, helping unpack my house. Like, because I was at work. So, you know, you kind of do need some friends. So if you don't have any, get yourself some. Because you're really going to need that. Especially if you're parenting alone. So, you know. But, yeah, it's great to have that extra time with your kids. It's really special. But let's not try and pretend like that anyone's a superhuman. I mean, I certainly am not like every day like, what a joy you got. It's just us again. Like, wow, I'm so lucky. You know, like, sometimes it's just hard. Yeah, it's just hard. But parenting is hard.
You know, one thing that you said, sorry, I'm such a blabbermouth, but one thing I thought about was when you said that about doing things alone, I had my first two kids in Australia. And over there, it's like going back in time 50 years, you know, especially where my husband's from. And, you know, I had cloth diapers, all everything. So anyway, they had these things called play groups. And they had like these little houses set up in different communities that women would go to and have a play group. And so the moms would get together and have a cup of tea, you know, because that's what they do in Australia, have a cup of tea, and all the kids would play. And it was such a cool thing. I was like, this is really cool because, you know, especially if you're a stay-at-home mom with little kids, you know, you get a little bit crazy sometimes. And so it was fun. So when I moved back here, I had two little kids, like a newborn. I was pregnant with my third child and a little two-year-old. And so I moved back here, and I'm at home, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to start a playgroup. So I made flyers, and I went around the neighborhood, and I don't, the Puckets, you know the Puckets, that's how I met them. They lived, these people, they lived in the neighborhood, and I crashed my car, and I noticed they had little kids when he came to help me, so I was like, okay, I'll invite her. So I passed out these flyers. I said, I'm starting a playgroup. And I thought, okay, who's going to show up? They showed up, and we did it for years. We would meet once a week, and we would take turns bringing snack, and it was just great because, you know what, we need each other. We're not in competition. We need each other. So glean from one another. Encourage one another.
And it really, if you don't have that support network, let me just tell you, you're in good company. I just moved to a new city, and hence the unpacking. So I just moved to a new city where I don't really, I mean, I know some people from work, but I don't really have a community. So I'm in the hustling stage right now. And it's awful. Like, it's hard. It's hard, right, to, like, start over and be like, okay. But I know in the back of my mind, okay, I know what I need in order to survive motherhood, right? Like, in order to parent my kids well, I know I need a supportive network. And so I'm just kind of hustling and being like, hey, want to be friends? Like, you look cool. Like, I don't know. We could be friends. I've got, like, 15 minutes a week, so I could pencil you in, and it'd be fun. So, you know, like, it is what it is. You work with what you got. You realize where you are in life, and then just say, okay, this is what I need. I'm going to do what I know to do. It might not be the right thing. And what's cool is that, like, you'll be redirected. As long as your goals are just to do what you know that God has told you to do, then if you do the wrong thing, it's never really the wrong thing. You just, like, maybe you go about it the wrong way and you end up frustrated, and then it's cool because the door just gets closed, and then you turn around and you're like, okay, well, all I got is to keep going. So I'm just going to turn this way now and try and beat down this door. And then you just... it is what it is. And eventually you wake up and you're like, hey, look at that. I've got friends and plans on Friday night. Look at that. So
one of the questions we had was, how do I not feel like motherhood is a competition? Often my mother friends boast all about their about what their child is doing and how advanced they are. No one talks about the struggles of their child. So we all, somebody, I don't know who just said it, but we are all in this together. And I think Sheena just said that it takes a village for a child. It also takes a village of support from each other. We are not in competition with each other. We need to lift each other up and be that support for one another, because when it comes down to it, we are all facing the same struggles. And that perfect family, that mom who was boasting about her child, I guarantee you that morning she was probably going crazy getting the kids ready just so when they walk in the door, they look perfect, right? Oh, we weren't arguing. We weren't fighting. I just wasn't yelling at my kid. Oh, they're so smart. Look, they can write their name. Come on. No, nobody has that perfect life, that perfect family. We all have the same struggles. What we need to do is just open the conversation. Yep. Start talking about it. And it's okay to not be perfect, and we are all flawed as mothers. And where one of us is weak, somebody else could be strong. Absolutely. But we're never going to know unless we talk to each other and share that with each other.
Yeah, I would even say to that group of friends, maybe it's one or a few who boast and are excited and constantly proud of their kids, I would just say, okay, I'm struggling, man. How'd you get Johnny to do that? Because I can't get so-and-so to do that. I would just be honest and real and authentic and just say, dude, I can't do it. I don't know how you did it, but could you give me some tools, some tips? Because my child's not responding the same way. And again, as we've shared, each child is different. Each child is going to respond differently to certain disciplines. Cadence is a stubborn, tough little girl. And if I threaten a SWAT, she looks at you like, bring it. Seth, on the other hand, he has a sensitive heart. And he's the boy, so you'd think like, oh, he's going to own it. No, you get upset with him and he melts. With Caden, she could care less. But you just have to be honest and real with people, and they can guide you. And you can try it. It doesn't mean it's guaranteed to work. Their theory might not work, but just be honest. And maybe by you opening up and opening that door of like, hey, I haven't been able to get my son to do this, maybe they can then feel the freedom of saying the same. Well, your daughter seems like an angel. What'd you do for her? And then you can have that conversation.
It's important too for us to remember that, you know, the Bible talks about rejoicing with those who rejoice and weeping with those who weep. And so if your friend is like really winning at motherhood and her kids are like state champs and doing awesome, like, say congratulations.
Yes.
Kim, your kids are
awesome.
So excited. Like,
yes.
I'm excited for you and support her, because if it were your kids doing awesome things, you would need that support and encouragement too.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's okay to rejoice with other moms whose kids are doing great.
Yes.
You don't have to compare your child and say, well, my kid's not a state champ. And, you know, like, be excited for her. And then also the same is true for moms that are having a harder time. Be willing to be to show some empathy and understand that situation too, because, you know, it's just like you. You've had seasons of great achievement and then seasons where you're down, and we just all need that empathetic stance.
And then having my daughter with Asperger's too, it was really helpful when, like, my three-year-old is on the floor in the grocery store because she touched something that is on her hand now, and she's totally freaking out. Nobody else around me knows that my daughter has Asperger's because she looks totally normal. But she is, like, screaming and having an anxiety attack. And I was in a grocery store, and this one mom sensed it. And she knew by the reaction that my daughter had a sensory issue, she came right up to me and she hugged me. And she said, "You're doing a great job." That right there, that was all I needed. That was all I needed, because this one mom totally identified with what I was going through. And I hugged her back and I said, "Thank you so much." And I cried. She stood with me there until my daughter was done. We went to the restroom together. She helped watch my other daughter while I calmed my daughter down. So just right there, this total stranger just coming up to me and saying, "You're doing a great job." Mm-hmm. Oh, that just meant the world to me at that moment. So we just have to lift each other up and be there for one another.
And do take advantage when they say it takes a village to raise a child. It really does. Without a support system, whether they're encouraging you or taking care of your kids when you need a mental break or whatever the case may be, it really is important to surround your kids with those kind of adults that'll pray for them even through adulthood. I mean, I would encourage you to join a connect group if you're not in a connect group. We were in a home fellowship where the other moms to this day still pray for my kids, and I can pray for their kids, and that's priceless. Mm-hmm. It really is a priceless thing to have in your little bucket of tools in raising kids. And like Shana said, rejoice with those who rejoice. Mm-hmm. What a better teachable moment. Mm-hmm. If Francis's kids are doing amazing, and I go home and tell my kids, "Wow, we should congratulate them. That's awesome. What a great job they did." What is that teaching my kids? It's teaching my kids, oh, we rejoice with others. Because today's society says, oh, no, it's just our family. If our family doesn't do good, we're supposed to be jealous. Mm-hmm. So we're teaching our kids how to respond, and we want to teach them to rejoice.
And you know that I was that mom that had, back then, I always had the most kids. I had the most unruly son. You know what I mean? I'd go to the, daycare at the gym. Oh, in Australia, they call it creche. Oh, he's biting again. He's biting. He's biting people, kids. And I'm like, okay, Lord. Then I come back from Australia to meet with my old friends that all have their little, children that are very, nice and proper. And they're little boys, or maybe a year older than Cody, and they're just so well-behaved. And Cody's running all over the yard, knocking him down and pushing him, and like, rah, here I am, And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, they're never going to invite me back. But I had to really pray through a lot of things, feeling bad that I wasn't the homeschool mom, and the enemy will use that and try to lie to you and say, oh, their kids are all perfect, and look at you, you're a failure, and you can't do anything, and, don't let the enemy lie to you. Silence the voice of the enemy and pray and just say, Lord, how do I respond to this friend that seems to have it all together? And like you guys said, rejoice with them. Ask them, hey, because we've got to be real with each other. And when we are real with them, then we break down that barrier, and maybe they can just respond and say, oh, you know what? It's not always like that. Or, don't compete against each other, Yeah. Love each other.
I'm going to go to this question here. The mother has a defiant teenage boy who won't do the small chores, talks disrespectfully, and throws mom out of the room and makes hateful, nasty comments. For one, start by taking it to the Lord in prayer and spending so much time in prayer. And also, depending how severe it is, or even if it's not, come in and talk to a pastor and get to a place where you have something regular helping you encourage along the way. Now, it sounds like he's going through a lot in his head, and not to excuse it, but the only thing you can do right now is pray and realize, get away from the entitlement mentality. It's surprising how effective it is when you take away privileges. A mm-hmm. phone is a privilege. Your child is not going to be lost somewhere and need that 25 cents for a phone booth. Someone around them will have a phone to call you in an emergency. They don't need a cell phone. They don't need an allowance necessarily. They don't even need a door on their door, on their bedroom. Depending how severe it is, it's not their right to have a door on their bedroom. And I think our generation has kind of got us all confused as to what's expected and what's entitlement. Mm-hmm. And then on another side note, go to Parchments and get the book on the five love languages. Obviously, you know, you're not speaking in the right terms, and it's good for any parent. Find out what your child's love language is, whether it's writing notes to them or words of encouragement, whatever the case may be. You want to focus on what's going to win them over and bring them back, and stay away from the things that don't.
That's so, I mean, so right on with your with knowing what speaks to your kids, because what speaks to Cody doesn't speak to Michaela or Brittany or even, you know, Chelsea. They're all, you know, but knowing the keys, because like sometimes, especially with my son and one of my daughters, when they don't have quality time with us, like alone time, I see more rebellion. And or I see, like Cody used to, he would get, like when he was young and he didn't have time, like with dad, he would kind of just act kind of like he didn't care. Then he'd get real tough. And that anger was not really because he was angry, but he was hurt. And so, you know, knowing what your kids' love language is, what really matters to them, helps with that, because they're missing something. You know, they're acting out because they are, there's something going on that maybe they're not having time with you. And it's hard when you have multiple children, you know, to have that one-on-one time. But find those pockets, even if it's, hey, let's go for a little walk around the block, or let's go for a little quick bike ride, or whatever it is. But, you know, knowing exactly what you said about the love languages, and speak their love language, speak into their lives in that way that's going to really impact them.
And we're going to have to wrap things up because we're getting close on time. Yes, we will. I can't say I'm an expert because I have a 4-year-old in 8 days and a 5-year-old. So I'm not an expert, but on behalf of the card that the woman said, their child is running away and they come back with a hateful attitude. I would say I was raised in a Christian home. I was in a home that was loving, but I was that rebellious kid, and I was the kid who would threaten to run away, or I'd run away to my neighbor's house, not like next door, but within the neighborhood, that they weren't believers, and so they would accept me just fine. I would say you have to get down to the bottom of what is going on with them internally. They're not running away just because they're being corrected or disciplined. There is a deeper issue, whether that is their own personal insecurities, or they are in a place where they are living in sin, and you really need to have a conversation with them. Ask them genuinely, what is going on? What, you know, communicate with me. And no, they're not necessarily going to open up right away. But I can tell you that, like Yvette said, if you bring your child in to speak with a youth pastor, and for you to speak to a pastor at that same time, you'd be surprised how a younger mediator or someone other than yourself can speak into your children's lives, and how their ears all of a sudden open up when somebody can relate to them that isn't mom or dad. I didn't really want to hear it from mom or dad. But having a youth pastor or somebody else come alongside and be aware of what the situation is, they can probably get down to the bottom of it easier and faster than you can. So I would encourage you to lean on your church family. We're a family and we care for one another. And that is a resource that we have, but we sometimes overlook.
The last card, I think, right?
Yeah.
So this is a question from a single mom. It's an older child that lives with dad. Dad allows girlfriends to stay over and drink, etc. So she's asking how to parent when the other parent is the buddy and not a parent. So there's a couple different things here. One, particularly for single moms, it's especially hard, but here's something that all parents can relate to. How do we control what happens in our kids' lives when they're not under our care? So this is a struggle that is common to every mother that has ever lived. You are going to have opportunities where you cannot control your children and what they do and what kinds of environments they're put in. And so
part of that is learning to just trust God with your kids, right? That is so hard. That is probably the hardest thing to do with our kids is to trust anyone with them, right? I think that the reason it becomes escalated and more emotional is because there's so much hurt, probably in that relationship with your kids' father. And so you have to answer these questions. Is your child safe? And be honest about it. Now, I know maybe you don't drink and they drink. Maybe you make them go to bed at 8 and they let them stay up until 10 or whatever. But those are just life differences, okay? So you have to be able to honestly answer the question, is my child safe? If you answer yes, you have to let some of that other stuff go. And that's hard. It's just hard. You have to just be willing to say, Lord, like, I'm going to trust that as much as I love my child and want to protect them from, like, the evils of the world, you want that more. And it's, I wish there was an easy way to say, if you do these 5 things, or here's a way to control what they do. The bottom line is, there is no way to control people. Really. You can't. So I can tell you what will help free you as a mother, and that is to focus on what's happening when your children are in your care. And if you can put your focus and your attention on what you do when your kids are in your care, and then just praying that God let it by your amazing grace be enough, because it doesn't feel like enough. It feels like as soon as they go out of as soon as they go to that parent's house, I lose all control. And the reality is, you do. And you also lose all control the minute your kids walk out the door and go to school, and the minute that they go to the mall, and the minute that they have their first date, and the minute that they do anything.
The minute that they become adults.
The minute that they become adults. Even when our kids are very young, right, the minute that they have to go to daycare, we don't, the thing is, control is such a, it's such a fragile illusion, really. Hmm. It's like chasing after or trying to grasp a cloud, right? You don't really have any control. So what you're afraid to lose, you never had. Hmm. And so you have to just kind of let a little bit of that go and realize that, like, your kids are just with you for the time that you have them. Focus on what you can do as a parent and how you can pour into their life, and then know that God has to have them because you can't be with them all the time. And I hope that would free you to not have it be a constant, not that it's easy or that I'm an expert, but the second part of this, and sorry this is a long answer, but how to parent when the other parent is a buddy parent. Now, this is also not a question that is like unique to single mothers. And I think sometimes, it's funny because I think any kind of parenting, what we do is we like to isolate us, and we like to think our situation's the only situation and no one's ever felt the way we felt. And that kind of keeps us from reaching out and having a community. But, you know, the Bible says that there's no temptation, but that's what is common to man. And so any temptation or any situation that you can be in that you're tempted to feel angry or bitter or afraid or any of those other feelings, those are common, and everyone has experiences them to some extent. So I know no one wants to be Hitler mom to a dad. No one does, right? You don't want to be. You don't want to be the Hitler
confession.
Right?
I kind of do.
No one does.
I've always been the bad guy.
No, I've been Hitler mom for years, and it sucks. Like, sometimes I'm like, I just want to be Disney mom. Like, I just want to be like the, but the truth is, I'm so tired. And, like, because I'm doing the delayed gratification part in their life, I'm saying I'm going to do the hard work. And so It's like you just decide what do you want. You can be the Disney mom too if you want.
You can be the Disneyland mom now. I'm the Disney.
Yeah, you can choose. You get to choose. Yeah. The point is that how you behave is your choice. If you want to be Disney mom now, just know that you might be giving up a future of having kids that would return and call you blessed, and that would that would rise up and call you blessed. Or you can just choose to say, you know what, it might feel like Hitler mom because I'm the one who has to pack the lunches and make sure they do their homework and make sure, and that's hard, but I think it's you're sowing in something that will yield great fruit. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally. And I would just second or add on, I guess, to that is I don't think we ever stop being parents. My mom has never stopped being a mom. And even when my brother was totally on his own and a grown man and dating, just because his decisions didn't line up with her morals did not mean she ever let that moral drop. When you're in my house, girls don't sleep in your room. When you're in my house, you don't drink. Under my roof, these are my rules. And you don't have to pound it into their head. You can just love them and show them that, like, hey, under my house, this is how it goes. That's your choice. You're a grown man. You're on your own, independent completely. That you cannot control, like Shayna said. But you will always be a mother and you will always be an example. And my mom never stopped being that example. My brother is now married and living for the Lord, but he had to see that example first. He had to have those morals even after 18 when they do claim, you have no control over me. You're right, but in my home, this is what I live by. And you can continue that on.
I will interject just one last thing. If there are some things that if I don't feel, like my daughter's really asthmatic. She's got really problems with asthma. So like, if there's smoking around, that's one of the that's a battle I choose to pick. Like that, hey, there can't be any smoking. Now, can I control it? No, but I can certainly go that extra mile to say, hey, don't smoke around my kids because, that's wherever they are, wherever they go, because she's asthmatic. And so that's, you just decide, okay, and that, it boils down to the, are they safe? And if you answer no, well, then my goodness, do what you can to make sure that your kids are safe. But if they're safe and it's just different than the way you do things, then let it go.
Yeah. All right. Do we have any other last minute throw them up there, have to get it out question? Oh, we got one.
How is your husband involved if you are
married
and discipline, and how do you guys
lean
on each other?
Or
just...
Oh, the beauty. I actually have a hilarious story about discipline. So when my youngest was in kindergarten, well, entering into kindergarten, my friend was her teacher. And that year they did home visits to each student's class before the school year started. And her name was Mrs. Martinez, and she was there at her house. And Jordan was so excited to show her her and her sister's room, because at the time they shared a room. And she's giving her the tour, and she said, this is my bed, this is Trinity's bed, this is our closet, here are my shoes, that's the belt Mommy and Daddy hit us with. And thank goodness this teacher is my friend, because she looked at me and she just turned red, and I just said, yeah, that's, we leave it hanging on the wall as a reminder. So
my kids found the strap and they hit it. But one thing with Maria and I, what we do is we kind of, like I was telling you about our family code, we kind of have, when they were really little, we had things that were acceptable and things that were not. And so how we discipline is, and even, our 17-year-old, she's still, going through the teenage thing a little bit. And so, we try to do it behind the scenes. We discuss it before we take action, because we never want it to be like when they were little, I never said, wait till your dad gets home. I wanted them to fear me as much as they feared their dad. You know what I mean? So we kind of are in agreement, and we try to like do it together, and we discuss offline, not around the kids, about what is going to be the consequence to their action, and we backed each other up, and if we didn't agree with what, you know, if I don't agree with what Murray's doing, you know, I'll do it behind the scenes and go, you know, that was a little bit harsh, you know, or whatever. But really important to be united in front of them, even if you're not really in front of them, be united and try to discuss, even, you know, on the non-conflict times, you know, what, how you would handle situations. Because, you know, you, your kids, the best gift you can give to your kids is unity, and to know that they, that you love each other. You and your husband love each other, and that you were first and they came second.
And I would say, just because Nathan is the only child, he was raised very differently than I was raised. And so we didn't meet eye to eye on disciplinary action. We both received swats or spankings, whatever you want to refer them to, but we just didn't see eye to eye on what was, I guess, acceptable, what was the need for a swat or a timeout or this or that. And it really does come to discussing it with them in private. It is huge to hold the front of what your dad said is what your dad said, or if he belittles you or he's saying something in front of them when you've disciplined them, like, hey, you shouldn't have done that. You know, go with it at that moment, because you don't want to have a full-blown argument in front of them. So you just go with it at that moment. Okay, well, I believe that this needed to happen. John, go to your room. I'm going to talk with your father. Then you can go in private and talk about it and say, hey, next time. It does come down to communication with your husband. All of it does. You really need to communicate with them. Like, hey, I really felt like this was what needed to happen. And in that moment, I really felt like you needed to back me. Next time, please don't contradict me in front of them. If you communicate that in love, it won't erupt into a fight between the two of you. But you need to make sure that you're communicating and you're eye to eye on the same page. And when you're not, they're just like, you have to compromise in other areas, you'll have to compromise in that. And sometimes I am the one that is the disciplinary, sometimes it's Nathan. You never want to always be the bad guy. I understand that feeling. But if you're with them more, if you're a stay-at-home mom, if you're a single mom, that by default is going to happen, because you spend more time with them. I spend more time with my children than Nate does, because I work less than him. So by default, I discipline more often, and I'm more often the bad guy. But what's shocking with my kids is you'll find that they love me more for it. Like, there are times when they just want mom, and it's common, and I think it's because I'm the one that's laying down the law a lot of the time, and so it comes back to show that they love and respect me as well. Did that answer it, kind of? She's sure, kind of, not really.
And I just want to encourage those of you, maybe you have a husband who isn't disciplining them or isn't acting as the godly head of the house that you would prefer. And the best thing to do is just pray. Pray that the Lord would change him, and pray that at some point he would become that. And if you're consistent in praying that, I have a friend who was consistent in praying that for many, many years, and that's what she has now. She has her husband as the head of the house, the one making decisions, and the one seeking God first. So it is possible.
Alrighty, that will wrap it up. We'll be here if you guys want to talk individually or you want to hang out or whatever. We still probably have coffee and scones, so please take one to go. But if you have any questions that you want to talk about with any of us, please feel free. We'll be here.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.